outside. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a toy, can't just see, open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
Here we go, folks. It is Wednesday, February 18th, 2021. You are listening to today's edition of The Ugly Truth. Welcome to the program, folks. I hope you're all doing well, those of you of goodwill, as we like to say on this program. We have to differentiate that, folks, because we don't want to wish goodwill on our enemies who are bent on destroying us, because to them, a goodwill means, as I just said, destroying us. And so anything that contributes to that effort on their part is not something that we want to bless, despite the various silly things that we read in certain holy books, that those who bless our enemies will be blessed and those who curse our enemies will be cursed. Nevertheless, we don't want to, you know, as sheep amidst the wolves, we don't want to get too friendly with them. Anyway, first of all, folks, it's been a week, and I've gotten quite a few emails from people dealing with two items. Number one, complimentary words about the quality of the programs that we are trying to put together here, which, as I've said before, means a lot to me, folks. It does. I want more than anything else, I want to be effective, and I want to make sure that when I throw my dart at the dartboard that it gets as close to the bullseye as possible, because that is the only way that we are going to move forward with the very important business of our own survival. And so the fact that it is resonating with those of you out there listening to this program means a lot to me. And as I've said before, you know, I don't want to add to the already deafening wall of noise pollution, really is how I would put it, that exists out there in this modern internet age, where everybody now has got a website, everybody has got a podcast, everybody is contributing somehow to the discussion. And unfortunately, in 9 out of 10 cases, folks, they're either operating on very little information or on bad information. And as we know, when you use bad building materials, you know, going into any project, the project itself is flawed, and it's just a matter of time before it begins to suffer from those defects. Number two, the emails that I've been getting, people have been saying, "Where are you? We need you. We need you." And actually, folks, this is, I think, the third or fourth program that I have put together in the last 2 or 3 days. But as those of you who know me and know the work that I have done over the years know, I am very picky, as our good friend Mike Piper, may he rest in peace, one of the bad habits that I picked up from him is that I've become a stickler for details, including my own work. And if I feel like I am just not connecting with the thoughts that I want to convey to all of you in contributing or in creating this hopefully productive discussion, then I simply won't put it out there for consumption. And so I apologize for that, folks. You know, in that way, I suppose I'm like a very picky woman. You know, she's all the things have got to be just so, in order for her to surrender to the forces of nature. And in that regard, it's the same with me and this work that I do. Let's see, we've got a lot to talk about, folks, and unfortunately, I'm sure that today's program is going to be somewhat disjointed, hopefully not as disjointed as the previous programs have been. And that is part of the problem as well, folks, is that with so many things going on at once and so many important things, big important things, it's hard to squash all of this down into a zip file. Okay, those of you who understand computer terminology know what I'm talking about, where you'll take this big, big file and you'll squash it down into this thing known as a zip file. And it's very hard to do that, especially when you're a one-man operation like I am. You know, as I think I said on the previous program, I benefited greatly from the almost decade-long close friendship and collaboratorship, I guess is a good word to use, that I had with Mike Piper. We would talk on a daily basis, sometimes hours at a time, and more than likely, or more often than not, it was not just political, it was very, very political, dealing with the nitty-gritty of things. And so I benefited from him being my mentor on a lot of things. And, you know, it's like sparring. It's like being a boxer. And, you know, you don't want to get into the ring to spar, meaning to practice, to train, with some 90-year-old woman who can barely lift her arms. You know, you want to have somebody in there who is a prize fighter and, you know, who, if you really needed, if if he really meant it, you'd be on the floor within just one or two hits. And that was what it was like. Not that I had to spar with Mike, but rather that we, you know, we would game all of these things out, these political things that are going on. We would say, okay, what about this and what about that and where's it going to go from here and all of the rest of that. And I don't have that, obviously, as much as I did in the past. I have a few friends that I bounce ideas off of and very intelligent friends. I'm very lucky in that regard. But nevertheless, most of my work is done alone, within my, you know, within the confines of my own brain. And, you know, it's, like I said, it is difficult taking these very important topics, especially with everything that's going on right now, and trying to put it all together in a one-hour program once a week. So in that regard, folks, I realize that there are things, there are ideas, there are concepts, theories, hypotheses, whatever, that could be expanded upon and hopefully will be. Hopefully will be. And anyway, with that in mind, we might as well just get started. Let's see. First and foremost, I would like to send out my sincere hopes for any of you down there in Texas, those of you of goodwill, of course, I have to qualify that. Those of you of goodwill down in Texas who are dealing with the horrible weather that is hitting and the secondary effects that are coming from it. From what I understand, it is just pandemonium. People are cold. The shelves in the grocery stores are running out. And it really is a very serious crisis. And the unlikeliest of places, Texas, you know. I mean, it's hotter than hell there, literally. And, you know, it's something like that you could somewhat expect to see take place, for example, up here in the northwest part of the country, the United States. But definitely not something that you would expect to see down in Texas. And I've seen some commentary in a few places about how this is weather manipulation. And, you know, that's, of course, that is possible. We, you know, we can't put anything past the ability of evildoers. As I've said before, I think that there are people in throughout history, and they certainly exist today, who are, they have a radio receiver, a spiritual radio receiver, built into their mainframe, where they are able to hear things that the rest of us just are not able to hear, folks. And that includes the laws of nature, you know, that they have, you know, and anybody who needs validation of this, just look at the problems that we are facing right now as a result of someone figuring out how to split an atom, okay? And so I, you know, I'm not going to pursue that that discussion necessarily, that this is a result of weather manipulation. It just may be Mother Nature in one of her bad moods, which of course is just as possible as anything else. But I think what it does underscore is the vulnerability of the world in which we are living right now. Let's just take this thing, this situation here, and let's just move forward under the assumption, the agreed assumption, that this is just Mother Nature in one of her many bad moods. And you see what is happening as a result of this, the fact that we have a society where people are so dependent. And, you know, it's somewhat ironic that this is happening in Texas, because out of all the states out there that could be said to be, you know, the most fiercely independent, it is Texas, you know. Texas was its own country at one time. It was the Republic of Texas. And there have been several, and if I understand it correctly, and I could be wrong, and anybody out there who is in a position to correct me on this, please do. As I understand it, the treaty that was signed between the Republic of Texas and the United States, where Texas would be admitted into the Union, that it included within it the provision that if Texas ever decided that it was in its own best interest to leave that Union and to become an independent republic again, that it could do so. And yet, despite the fact that Texas, you know, as far as being a you know, the epitome of American independence, the people there have been brought to their knees. The state has been brought to its knees as a result of this thing that happened. And I think that this is a very good microcosm, maybe we want to call it that, of the United States in general, and how vulnerable our systems are, our entire system, whether it's the infrastructure of industry, of our economy, of whatever it is, that, you know, our technology is, in many ways, it is an illusion. You know, we remain powerful as long as that technology continues to function without being interrupted, but it doesn't take much to interrupt it. And evil people with evil designs, who have no doubt from the beginning, they have studied all of these various pressure points within our system as a country, as a civilization. They know exactly how to bring our nation to its knees. It wouldn't take much at all. In fact, as we have all witnessed now over the course of the last year, the nation has been brought to its knees economically, politically, socially, and everything else by this tiny virus, supposedly, okay? This virus that gets hyped and is used as a source of terror, you know, much in the same way that the religion of Islam was used following 9/11 in order to bring about certain geopolitical changes, which a certain group of people sought to have take place. The fact that it was magnified out of proportion, it was misappropriated, it was, you know, everything about it, it was just heaped with lies. And as a result of this, it resulted in changes to our country that otherwise would not have been possible. And you know, the fact that they are, well, let's see, we'll just move on to the next topic here, folks, which is the passing of Rush Limbaugh. Now, You know, this was one of the things yesterday that I did talk about on one of the programs, but which did not make it to the editing table, because I wanted a little bit more time to think about this. You know, as those of you out there know, Rush Limbaugh passed away yesterday as a result of losing his battle with lung cancer. And, you know, I'm not going to comment one way or the other on whether this was a good thing or a sad thing or whatever. Yes, I know President Trump called into Fox News and he gave a very kind and forgiving, I guess would be a good word, commentary on Rush Limbaugh. And, you know, what I will say, folks, is within the very, very, very limited sphere of what he committed himself to doing, he did a good job. You know, his entire opus magnus was exposing, you know, studying and exposing liberalism and its modern day manifestation in the Democratic Party and all the rest of that stuff. And within that very limited sphere of his MOS, as they say in the military, is military occupation service. Whenever you go into the military, you are assigned a certain MOS, your military occupation service. Now, some people are infantry, some people are cavalry, some people are wing wipers. That's what they call Air Force people who work on the planes, you know, technicians and things like that. So within Rush's MOS, his military occupation service, he did a good job. He exposed the dangers of liberalism, and nobody should make the mistake of thinking that they aren't, that the that liberalism is not dangerous, folks, because we have to remember the parent corporation from which liberalism springs, which of course is Marxism, or as I prefer to call it these days, folks, Karl Marxism. You see, again, there's a specific reason for me doing this, which is that when I say that people are followers of Karl Marx, you know, in this modern internet age, this maybe, hopefully, prompts them to go, Karl Marx, who is Karl Marx? I'm going to go look Karl Marx up. And when they do, they find out some very interesting and, I would say, important aspects of his pedigree, in that he is part of this very small but very influential and powerful group of people who are known to be followers of Judaism. Now, it's true that Marx, Karl Marx, based a lot of his Karl Marxism, a lot of his political theories, based upon his rejection of the religion of his fellow people. But this is not necessarily true, folks. Just because he doesn't happen to be a religious person, he didn't have, you know, the curly pigtails coming off the sides of his head. He didn't put the pancake on top of his head. He didn't bob back and forth, you know, when he would say his daily prayers or whatever. He may have even been an atheist. I don't know that for a fact. I tend to think maybe he was. But that doesn't mean that he wasn't a follower and a practitioner of Judaism, okay? Because when we understand that Judaism in its essence does not necessarily have anything to do with God, their God, whether it is Yahweh or Jehovah or any of the other names that they choose to give to this God. Judaism, in its essence, I think, was brilliantly described by a good friend of mine and a listener to the website, and whose description I have now co-opted in most of the commentary which appears on the website. And the essence of Judaism, folks, is that it is rooted in anti-Gentilism. It is the worship of the of the tribe and the dedication to the well-being of that tribe, to the detriment of all of those who are not part of that tribe. And so you will have people, you know, who practice Judaism and yet who are atheists, who don't believe in God, okay, but yet on a daily basis, who utilize and put into practice all of their energies and their efforts towards the destruction of Gentiledom. Okay, and this is, I guess, the best way to understand liberals, you know, because you will run into all sorts of liberal followers of Judaism who at the same time are very vocal opponents of the state of Israel and of Zionism. Okay, and unfortunately, you know, far too many gullible Gentiles hear this and they just swoon over this. Oh, isn't this wonderful? This follower of Judaism, and they are against the state of Israel without looking further. You know, a couple of years ago, there was this horrible, horrible Hebrew Shebrew named Natalie Cohen Vaxberg. And she lives in Israel, and she's a quote-unquote performance artist and a political activist. And she put together a video. Oh, God. I hate to even use the words necessary to describe this thing, folks, but unfortunately there's just no other way to get the picture across. She made this video of herself squatting down and defecating on various flags of various countries around the world, okay? And one of those flags happened to be the flag of the State of Israel. And the pro-Palestinian community was just, they were just effusive in their praise of this woman. Now, she wasn't just dumping, no pun intended, on the Israeli flag. She was dumping on every flag that she could get her hands on. Now, any civilized person in the West who may be on the fence with regards to the existence of the Jewish state and, of course, the very contested history of what has gone on over the course of the last century, and they run into a video like this, okay, and maybe they're on the fence. Maybe they're just starting to become friendly towards the Palestinian cause. And here is this horrible excuse for a human being who has videotaped herself squatting and dumping, defecating on various flags around the world. What do you think that's going to do for the Palestinian cause? And the amazing thing is, folks, at the time that this happened, of course, it was being paid. I was on the list, various lists of people, you know, their email lists, and this was being sent to me. Isn't this great? This nice Jewish girl who's crapping all over the Israeli flag. And I had to explain to them, this is not helping the cause of the Palestinians at all. Okay, the average American, completely propagandized American, you know, if you're trying to pull them out of Israel's orbit with something like this, you can just plain forget about it. And yet, folks, I had very little, if any, success whatsoever in making these various people who thought this was the greatest thing in the world understand how counterproductive this was and how it was hurting the Palestinian cause. Okay, so folks, I know we're getting way off the beaten path here, but bringing this thing, as our good friend Mike Piper used to say, bringing this thing full circle back to Mr. Limbaugh. Within his very limited sphere of expertise, he did a good job. He did a good job in underscoring the danger that that Karl Marxism plays to all of us. Where, of course, he fell way short was in underscoring that Zionism in and of itself is a form of Karl Marxism. Okay, anybody who has done and even just the most rudimentary, elementary study of the political origins of Zionism understand that it is a leftist ideology. Okay, all the original Zionists, all the big guys from the very beginning were devoted socialists. They were followers of Karl Marxism. It's just that they infused into this Marxism this thing known as Jewish nationalism. In addition to that, Mr. Limbaugh made sure to assiduously avoid the discussion of how Judaism, as an anti-Gentile ideology, as a force, a corrosive force working against Gentilism in all of its forms, he made sure to avoid discussing the very, very heavy role that the followers of Judaism play in American liberalism. Okay, it is not a mere coincidence, folks, that the three principal prosecutors against Donald J. Trump in both of his impeachment trials happened to be followers of Judaism. The first impeachment, of course, was prosecuted by Gerald Nadler and Adam Schiff. Not an accident. The followers of Judaism back in Tel Aviv, who orchestrated that entire political hit, wanted to make sure to convey to the political class that indeed it was Israel that was gunning for Trump. The second impeachment, the fact that it was prosecuted by a follower of Judaism, namely Jamie Raskin, okay, was not a coincidence. Israel wanted to make it known to the political class, in making an example of Donald Trump, that it was Israel and that it was the forces of organized anti-Gentilism that were gunning to bring him down. So, and then of course the biggest disaster, unfortunately, to which Mr. Limbaugh contributed his energies greatly was the quote-unquote war on terror that began 20 years ago under George W. Bush that has killed millions of people, displaced millions of people, wiped countries off the map, and has now nearly bankrupted the United States of America. And Mr. Limbaugh made sure during the 20-year period that he had to put a name and a face on the forces responsible for doing this. He made sure not to do that, folks. And in fact, you know, he had a prime opportunity when yours truly called into his program. I made it through the call screener and debated, you know, for a very short amount of time with him over this issue of how the neocons were indeed responsible for dragging the U.S. into this war, and it was being done in order to benefit Israel, not to rectify or fix or anything like that, you know, what had happened on 9/11. And Mr. Limbaugh wouldn't hear any of that. He said that this was, that it was not true, and that we, good Americans, should not waste a microsecond of our time or our attention span in thinking about this. And then, of course, 20 years later now, folks, he, you know, as we have said on this program, the things that we discuss on this program, you can either figure it out now, meaning come to grips with what we discuss here. You can either figure it out now or you can figure it out later. But eventually, circumstances that are beyond your control and that are impossible to avoid will force you to figure out the bottom line that we are discussing on this program. Now, for those of you who react to that to a certain degree with, you know, well, that's awful, that's awful arrogant on your part to say that. Well, no, folks, I don't claim to have all the answers. I don't claim to be infallible. But the few answers that I do have, I believe they are correct. If they aren't at the center of the bullseye, they're PDC, pretty darn close. Okay. And, you know, right now, Mr. Limbaugh, may he rest in peace, he's figuring it out. If he hadn't figured it out already before he left this earth, he's figuring it out now. The mistakes that he made in the 20 years, at least the 20 years since 9/11, in being part of the cover-up, being part of the cover-up of what happened on 9/11, why it was done, and who stood to benefit the most from propagandizing this thing in order to see certain huge geopolitical earthquakes take place. He's figuring it out now. And I believe that he had already figured this out before he left the earth, folks. He mentioned on one of his last programs that he felt that even though he had achieved a great deal of success in the 30 years of his time as a successful radio host, that he basically was a failure. And he didn't say so specifically, but what I read into that is the fact that he was watching as the president that he was waiting to see be elected, Donald Trump, for his entire life, how Trump was being taken apart piece by piece, and that the very people that Limbaugh had spent 30 years fighting against were doing it. And he has to know, folks. He has to know. He's not a dummy. He was a very intelligent man, very well informed. And it is as impossible to see the hand of the organized forces of anti-Gentilism in liberalism and in the entire war on terror thing, and, you know, the endless wars that Donald Trump meant to end as part of his presidency. So we wish Mr. Limbaugh well. May he rest in peace. But again, folks, this goes a long way towards validating one of the themes that we cover on this program, which is the need for specificity. You know, imagine that there is a, well, I'll just tell you, you know, we all have these phones now, these smartphones, and I'm sure that it's the same wherever it is that you live as it is here. If there is an Amber Alert, meaning a child that has been abducted, you'll get this automatic notification on your phone. And they give as much detail as possible. The type of car, the year of the car, the color of the car, the driver's or the license plate, okay? The person, a description of the child, and a description of the kid, of the person who has kidnapped this child. They don't say be on the lookout for a car and then give it no identifying characteristics. They don't say be on the lookout for a child who has been abducted without giving that child's name and, if possible, a picture. And they don't say be on the lookout for the kidnapper without providing as much detail as possible. It's a male, 5'10", shaved head. He's covered with tattoos. He's missing a couple of front teeth. He's white. He's got brown eyes. He's got a lot of jewelry. Blah. You know, they give as much detail as possible, because without that detail, every kid that you see might be that kidnapped child. Every male that you see might be the kidnapper. Every car that you see may be the car that is being used to, that was used to take this child away. And, You know, but this is the world we live in now, folks, where we are not allowed to give that specificity when it comes to the followers of Judaism. We're not allowed to give that. And in that regard, Rush Limbaugh, he did serve that purpose in that he basically kept the right wing corralled, okay? He gave them enough to keep them, you know, to fill their bellies with information that they wanted to know involving, you know, the dangers of Karl Marxism. But as far as putting that last piece of the puzzle into the picture and saying, these are the people who are doing it, this is why they're doing it, he refused to do it. And unfortunately, he's not alone, folks. There are plenty others alongside him operating at almost the same level. Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, Mark Levin, Ben Shapiro. You know, I saw a thing on Facebook the other day. Somebody had posted about Ben Shapiro. I hadn't even heard of this guy before. But he is on the radio locally up here, and I've heard him a couple. I can't listen to more than 15 seconds of him because, you know, just to listen to him talk, you're listening to a typical, highly, highly neurotic follower of Judaism. It's like I would rather listen to somebody scratch their fingernails, long fingernails, across a chalkboard. And anyway, I saw this post on Facebook just the other day talking about how Shapiro was not a real conservative. And I chimed in. I said, none of them are. None of them who of that particular pedigree of the followers of Judaism, being followers of Judaism, you know, as much as they side with the right now, and in that regard side with Donald Trump, if Trump were to say something such as, Israel needs to take care of Israel, and America needs to take care of America, okay? These America First Jews, followers of Judaism, would abandon him he would drop him like he was a hot potato, okay? And that is the thing that we have to be very cautious of when we allow these people, these infiltrators, to enter into our midst. Is just to imagine what the reaction on their part would be if America First president such as Donald Trump, if he were to come forward and say, as part of my platform of making America great again, we're going to cease all aid to Israel and we're going to let Israel take care of itself. We don't give aid to Iceland or to Indonesia or any of these other countries. Why should we give it to them? Let them take care of themselves. They're a rich, prosperous country. They have a very powerful military. They don't need our money. And you see what happens to these quote-unquote right-wing Republican conservative followers of Judaism. They would abandon such a politician in a heartbeat. So anyway, folks, I realize that was kind of an extended thing here, and I do want to keep this at about an hour because, oh gosh, we're already at 40 minutes. I've got a lot of work to do here on the ranch. That was another reason why I didn't put the programs out that I did. I was trying to get this very old tractor of mine running in preparation for a snowstorm that is coming today, and was having a lot of trouble, and it was really just distracting me and eating away at my concentration, and this is the reason why I consider the programs to be substandard and unacceptable for publication. But I think I've got the problem licked now, and this is the reason why I can go forward with today's program, but I do want to keep it just at about an hour. Okay, so folks, let's just jump into a few things. Of course, now the news is that Donald Trump has been acquitted, And as much as those of us who have supported him, including yours truly, welcome this, at the same time, it also is a harbinger of some very, very dangerous things that I think are almost inevitable. As I said on the last program, you know, there's no precedent for any of this that we've been witnessing in the last 5 years. No precedent whatsoever. And as I have said many, many times, it all revolves around Donald Trump's plans for disentangling American foreign policy objectives with what has been going on for the last half century at least. And this is the reason, this serves as the fuel for the entire seek and destroy mission against him on the part of the organized forces of anti-Gentilism, okay? They have much bigger plans than simply having Iraq destroyed. And they understand that if they lose America, if America falls out of that orbit that they created with 9/11, then they're going to have to recalibrate their plans and possibly even pull off another 9/11. Well, folks, that is what is coming now. Okay, now I'm not going to refer to him as President Biden because I know he's not president. But nevertheless, he is sitting there at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Okay, he is, at least by appearances and by de facto, okay, he is the commander-in-chief, you know, for the month or so that he has been in office. There have been all sorts of military orders that have been implemented per his authority. Sorry about that, folks. Per his authority. He has signed papers, and he has issued rulings about things, and these things have been put into force by people in uniform. So it's pointless to debate whether or not he's really president or not. The fact of the matter is that he is flying the plane. And with Donald Trump's second acquittal, and as I said on the last program, I think it was the last program, folks, his enemies, who have worked for 5 years to get him out of office before he could put the finishing touches on this disentanglement of American, American involvement in the Middle East, they're not worried about him coming back in 4 years. They're worried about him coming back in 4 weeks or in 4 months. That's the reason why they did this impeachment. That's the reason why they did this trial. And even though the trial, by the grace of God, ended with his acquittal, that doesn't mean they're done. As I have said on many occasions, when it comes to the followers of Judaism, when it comes to that corrosive force that was the topic of discussion in the soundbite that preceded the program, you know, they don't just have plan A, B, and C, okay? It goes from A to Z, and then it starts over again with some variation, A2, B2, C2, D2, and on and on and on until they achieve their objective. Now, their objective is to put things back on course that were interrupted 4 years ago when Donald Trump became 45th president of the United States and began pulling all of the various plugs out of this machinery. You know, since we're talking about, you know, I'm always working on some combustion engine type thing here, folks, whether it's the family truckster, you know, or whether it's my kids' cars, or whether it's a tractor or a chainsaw or something like that. Anybody knows, anybody who's worked on, you know, a combustion engine knows that that there are these things known as spark plugs, and that these spark plugs have these wires that go from the plugs to the distributor, okay? This is the electricity that powers the ignition process that causes the engine to run. And that if you want to stop the engine, you reach in and you start pulling those spark plug wires off of the spark plugs, and then the engine stops. This is what Donald Trump was in the process of doing for 4 years by pulling troops out of Syria, pulling troops out of Afghanistan, and in pushing forward this peace deal between Israel and the rest of the various countries in the Middle East. Okay, so now that Biden has been installed at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, the people who moved Trump out and who moved Biden in are in the process of plugging all of those wires back in and fueling up the engine, filling up the gas tank, getting the engine revved, okay, and they're getting ready to try and make up for lost time, the loss of 4 years. And that's what's coming, folks, now as a result of Donald Trump's being acquitted. Because he has been acquitted, now he has got this huge political following out there. And make no mistake about this, folks, the fact that Donald Trump, President Trump, has basically been incommunicado now for a month. That does not mean by any stretch that he has been just sitting there and silently stewing. He has got 100 different operations going on simultaneously, okay? Because as I've said, folks, you know, my personal theory is that he took the oath of office aboard Air Force One when he left the White House on January the 20th, and he went down to Florida, to Mar-a-Lago, which, by the way, folks, not so coincidentally, is known as the Winter White House and has been for decades, as I understand the history of it to be. He's got 100 different operations going on right now that we don't know about, the GameStop business being just one of those. It was, and it remains my theory, my thesis, that the entire GameStop short squeeze operation that took place, that this was Trump's baby. That Trump and his people did this, because when you look at the people who lost their rear ends as a result of that, they were the same hedge fund companies, managers, who had worked against him going all the way back to the 2016 campaign. Very powerful, organized Jewish interests, close ties to Netanyahu, close ties to Israel, to Israel's Mossad. And they not only worked against him in 2016, but they were the money bags for all of the various operations, including paying off members of Congress, powerful members of Congress, to initiate all of these investigations against him vis-a-vis the Russians and the Ukrainians and everything else. Okay, that was just one operation. And so what happened as a result of the GameStop drama is that as much as $70 billion was one of the numbers that I heard, $70 billion from these people that no doubt would have been used to bribe those Republican members of the Senate who were otherwise supporters of Trump and therefore not particularly inclined to convict him, that money was going to be used to bribe them into convicting. And I'm talking about a lot of money, folks. Not just $100,000, but maybe $100 million. Okay. Well, since that operation failed, now they've got to go on to plan whatever it is. We're way past A, B, and C by this point. And what that means is that they're going to have to dump a big, fat war in Biden's lap. Something big, folks, something really big. We can already see that it's in its embryonic stages with regards to Iran. And, you know, we know that the military doesn't like Biden. They don't like the fact that he's sitting in the White House. I'm sure that if they were to do an honest and accurate poll of the military from at least within the ranks of the enlisted and the junior officers, maybe not the senior officers, but certainly junior officers and your enlisted people, that you would find, you know, numbers as high as in the 90s in support of Trump, and numbers as high as in the 90s against Biden. Okay, but nevertheless, if something really big happens in this country, a really, really bad false flag attack, 9/11 times 100, okay, that literally takes the, you know, the kind of emergency situation that we see taking place in Texas right now, and multiplies it across the country times 100, you know, like an attack on our power grid, something like that, which is very easy to do, as we're seeing right now with what is going on in Texas. It is very easy to do that. So let's say that there were a cyber 9/11. That's something that they've been talking about now for 20 years. Or an economic 9/11, okay? Something that yours truly wrote about back in 2008, dealing with the financial crisis that I believe was deliberately done by the forces of organized anti-Gentilism in order to get the next phase of their wars started with regards to Iran, that they planned on blaming it on Iran. So let's say that something really, really bad happens, especially now, folks, when the economic infrastructure of the country is so badly weakened as a result of all of the hype dealing with COVID. Okay, these soldiers who, you know, they are firmly in the camp of Donald Trump, and they are definitely not in the camp of Joe Biden. Nevertheless, if the country is falling apart, they're gonna follow their orders as given. Worse yet, if they can make the case, they being the, again, the followers of Judaism, the forces of organized anti-Gentilism, if they can make the case that this was the work of the Iranians, the Russians, whoever, maybe the Chinese, you see. Because I think ultimately, I think what they want is to see China supplant and replace the United States as the world's lone superpower. And, you know, we don't have to go to war with China in order for China to defeat us and to be and to step into first place. If the United States crumbles economically, which would be very easy to do given, you know, our debt at the national level, whether it's government debt, whether it's personal debt, coupled with the very serious economic problems that we're dealing with right now as a result of the deliberately hyped virus, China wouldn't have to fire a shot if it became the world's economic superpower and replaced America. So what I'm saying is that as much as we, at least yours truly, are celebrating the fact that Trump has been, that President Trump has been acquitted, that doesn't mean that, well, what it means for sure is that they're going to go to plan whatever, plan Z. And that we can assume that something is going to blow up sometime very soon. It may very well be, folks, that what is going on in Texas was just a trial run. It was a beta test, as they call it, of something that they are planning to do across the country. So, and again, folks, you know, I suppose the argument can be made that it is at this point, at this late stage in the game, it is pointless at this point to try and have a conversation of this type focusing on the specificity of the who, what, where, when, why, and how of all of it. But you know, what else can we do? What else can we do? If your house is on fire And if the only thing that you have, literally, is a bucket, and you have to run back and forth, bringing water from wherever you get it, and then dousing it, then that's what you do. You don't just sit by and watch as the house is consumed in flames. And in to some degree, I suppose that is exactly what is taking place with regards to this. And also, folks, you know, I think it's important that we keep in mind that it isn't over until it's over. And the fact that it all seems hopeless at this point, and I will confess, you know, I'm one of those people who basically says, and I find this interesting because, you know, in the conversations that I have with the handful of people that I know, where we talk about political things, they say, I wish I had your hope. And I say, excuse me, back up for a second here. You think that I'm hopeful? You think that I have hope about this? I don't. I'm absolutely sure that the world as we know it, the system as we know it, is going to crumble like the Twin Towers on 9/11 and like the two temples in Jerusalem that were brought down by first the Babylonians and then the Romans. That this system is going to come down deliberately, and that we're going to look back on this period of tumult that we have been dealing with now for X number of years, and we're going to say to ourselves, those were the good old days. Nevertheless, at the same time, you know, these various disasters, as we have discussed, they do present unique opportunities for us. So you're right. We can't undo the disaster that has taken place. But once we have people's attention, whose lives have been severely disrupted or even destroyed by this disaster, we have the unique opportunity to reach them and to make them understand things that otherwise would not be possible. Not because they're incapable of understanding it, but rather because they just don't want to hear about it. And that really is the root source of the problem, folks. It's that it's not an action of the intellect or a deficiency of the intellect as much as it is an act of the will. They simply don't want to know. They don't want to know about, you know, what that last piece of the puzzle is in explaining why their lives have fallen apart. You know, if you look at a puzzle and all of its various pieces, and you've got, you know, it's just a picture of misery on an individual and on a collective basis. You have war, you have economic problems, you have social problems, you have the breakdown of the family, you have the complete disruption of the natural order. And sitting in the center of this puzzle is this creature with a thousand different arms going 360 degrees around the picture. And you can see that the hand attached to each of those arms doing something. It's lighting a fire. It's lighting a fuse. It's pulling a trigger. It is swinging a baseball bat. It's strangling somebody. It's pushing somebody over a cliff. All of these things. And, you know, but in the center of the picture, the one piece that's not there is the piece that has the face of that thousand armed person, or 666 arms. Let's get biblical about it. Remember that stupid song by Olivia Newton-John, Let's Get Physical? Let's get biblical. Let's get biblical. Sorry, folks. Actually, you know what? That is something I thought of, gosh, 10 or 15 years ago. I was going to use it in something I wrote, and just like a lot of things, it just got put on the shelf, and I never used it again. Let's get biblical. Biblical. Sorry, folks. So there's that last piece of the puzzle, folks, and that last piece of the puzzle, what does it show? It shows the face of those who are the followers of Judaism. who act according to the protocols of the particular code, the computer code, that runs their operating system. And this is going to feature, hopefully, folks, on the next program that we're going to do. And what I want you to do, folks, here's your homework assignment for today until we meet again. If you haven't seen the Terminator movie series, and I'm sorry, folks, I know I complain about Hollywood a lot, and but once in a while, there are things that come from it that we can utilize to our benefit in making a point. You know, in Jesus Christ, our the greatest political philosopher in human history, in my opinion, he did this a lot as well. You know, there were things that he said that where he would reference things in Jewish tradition from the Old Testament, from the Torah, which maybe he didn't even believe. We know there was a question about it because there were times when Jesus would be trying to deprogram those people in his midst who were under the spell of Torah Judaism, you know, and he would say, you know, you have heard, you have seen it written thus, blah, 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 blah. And it would come right from one of the five books of Moses. But then he would say, but I say to you instead, blah, blah, blah. Well, he did this one time in one of his many parables where he was talking about the times in which we live. And he said they will be like the times of Noah, where everyone will be just living their lives in a very carefree manner, not paying attention to anything. There would be a few people who knew of the storms that were coming, and they would prepare for these things. But the rest of the people would not realize what was coming until the flood waters were upon them. Okay, so bringing this thing back full circle, as our good friend Mike Piper used to say, I know I complain about Hollywood a lot, but there are a few things in Hollywood, even within that corrupt and corrosive, what will we call it, this thing, whatever, where some very valuable learning can take place. And in one of those is in the Terminator series. Now, as far as I know, James Cameron, who put these movies together, the brainchild of all of these things, I'm pretty sure he is of the Gentile persuasion, pretty sure. And he has made some really good movies. And the Terminator, even though they are very gratuitous in their violence, and I apologize for making this recommendation, but there's a very powerful theme in this that we're going to be discussing on the next program, okay? And what it is it's known as Skynet in the lore of the story. Skynet is the computer system. It's an artificial intelligence program that drives the behavior of these Terminators. Okay, Skynet is the big computerized infrastructure and the artificial intelligence programming that drives these various Terminators to go and do what they do, which is that is their war against humanity, folks. Their war against humanity. And this is my latest fascination right now, is this comparison between Skynet, and think about that, the title of it itself, Skynet, meaning it's a network, goes out all over the place, and it's up there in the sky, you know. Just like, you know, this violent, vindictive God that has created this system of morals for a specific group of people and has placed them at war against the rest of humanity. And who, to some degree, you know, they follow that, the dictates of that code that has been installed on their hard drive. It's like, and we'll pick up on this on the program as well to come, folks. It's like the tale of two Freddies. I'm going to say this very quickly because we're already over an hour here, and I want to wrap this up and get busy with my responsibilities for the day. Tale of two Freddies, okay? And again, I have to use Hollywood here as our base of operations. But when it comes to these Terminators, they basically, within the followers of Judaism, they fall within, there are two extremes here, if you want to call them extremes. You have the character Freddie Benson, and those of you who haven't seen the movie Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, you really should. It's one of the funniest movies that's ever been made. Played by Steve Martin. His name is Freddie Benson, and he's this con artist who cons unsuspecting women out of money. And he usually gets, and he's really happy if he manages to get $20 from them. He's just a leech. He's a parasite. He's a sponge. He just wanders from town to town looking for unsuspecting women, and he plays on their sympathies so that they'll buy him lunch. And then you have Freddy Krueger, folks. Freddy Krueger from the Halloween, I think it's called Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, whatever. I never saw the movies. I just know the character image. And he's this serial killer, murders people for no reason. The followers of Judaism, folks, fall within one of those two extremes. You have Freddie Benson, who's just a drifter and a grifter and a mooch and a con artist, who doesn't do anything really more damaging or, dangerous than having a woman buy him a $20 lunch. And then you have Freddy Krueger, the people such as the neocons who get wars started in the Middle East, who bring down governments such as that of the United States with what has just taken place with this coup against President Trump. That is the essence of Judaism and of its followers. They fall within that spectrum of the two Freddies, Freddie Benson and Freddy Krueger. But despite the fact that they differ from each other in degrees, nevertheless, by virtue of that code that has been installed on their hard drive, and that code being the code of Judaism, which in its essence is rooted in anti-Gentilism, they are all criminals to some degree. Some of them are petty criminals, like Freddie Benson. Some of them are mass murderers, such as Freddy Krueger. Anyway, that's it for today, folks. Thank you for your patience. I realize that a lot of this was disjointed. I hope it made sense. Like I said, I want to be effective. I want to be effective. I want to give good food that nourishes the mind and the spirit and the body. And because of that, because I insist upon serving good food, that is the reason why oftentimes there is something of an erratic schedule to the program. Those of you who would like to contribute to the costs associated with producing this program, you can send me an email to theuglytruthradioprogram@gmail.com. That's all one word, the Ugly Truth Radio Program. And I will put you in touch with how to send a few dollars our way. So that's it for today, folks. Until we meet again, God willing, stay safe, stay sharp, keep your faith.